Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
We need to get moving now.
Hello, just you. It's again with Melrose Place. Just talking to the one person listening.
I see.
This is season 3, episode 4, Grand Delusions. Now here are your hosts, just your hosts, Tara Ariano and Sarah D. Bunting.
Now I understand what you're doing. This is the grand delusion of our one listener thinking this whole podcast is just for them.
Let's say yes.
Okay. Hi, Sarah.
Hello, Tara and Dave and you.
Before we get into today's episode, Grand Delusions, again with this episode 26 dropping for our Patreons on December 11th. The topic is let's watch A Day in the Life of Melrose Place. So a while ago, our listener Will H. tipped us to this special that aired on Fox around this point in season 3. I flagged it. I looked it up at the time to see, like, when was this? And so noted when to put it in our Patreon schedule. So this was a special where they just followed the cast around as they filmed the show. That's how big a hit it was at the time. That's, like, literally all it was. So we're going to watch and discuss it. And since Will put it all up on YouTube for us, you can too. We'll link it in the show notes if you want to watch it to prepare. So Day in the Life of Melrose Place in our next Patreon episode, December 11th.
I think I watched that when it aired.
Wow.
But enough about me. Let's talk about you.
Yeah.
Hey, we are recording this episode way in advance of when it will drop. But as of yesterday, we just hit our final Patreon goal of $1,600 in pledges,
woo!
Which means we will be doing 4 bonus episodes a month from now on for everyone, plus the additional once monthly Again With Them episode for everyone at the $5 level and up. Thank you so much to everyone who got us here. And
yeah,
if you haven't yet, it is never too late. All the archives you've been hearing us talk about are there waiting for you when you sign up. We are excited to bring you even more stuff.
Yeah. So join us at patreon.com/againwiththis for that, for everything from the past, for everything in the future, everything. Wow.
And there are so many things.
Oh, my
so
God.
Many.
So much.
Sound like a UN speech in here.
Yeah. all right. Let us get into Grand Delusions, starting with our D plot. Reed's parents escalate hostilities against Joe. Oh, Joe. Allison and Joe are having pre-work coffee as Billy performatively throws his dumb shit in boxes in preparation for moving out. We will get to him and discuss Reed's parents' case, the custody case that they dropped on her at the end of the last episode. Allison's bad advice is that going to said parents directly and assuring them that Joe will want them in the baby's life will defuse the situation and get them to back off and will be cheaper than hiring a lawyer. Yeah, you know why it's cheaper than hiring a lawyer? Because it's dumb.
Like, yeah, dumb is free. That's true.
Yeah. Like, Joe, have some sense. This is about custody of your child, not who gets the Springsteen box set after a breakup. What are you doing?
Yeah. Also, you killed their son. Like, you know, you had no choice, but you killed their son. This is not going to be like an amicable division of the albums.
No, they're mad. Like, just because they seemed nice when you met them in person doesn't mean they still feel that way. You can tell because they brought a custody suit against you. That's kind of a tell. Nevertheless, Joe takes Allison's stupid advice and journeys to Reed's ancestral home, which you can see this in the visual aids. It is like country craft barfed all over this joint. There's a fucking spinning wheel like as decoration in the living room, which I did not even notice until I went to cut clips and or cut pictures. And then when we see Jo sitting on the couch, she's also in a mixed media dress with like one pattern up to her, you know, pregnancy empire waist, and then a different one below that don't really match, which is fitting for this room because there's like one print on the couch, different print on the wallpaper, and then like multiple throw pillow prints, including one that's just a bunch of bunnies. Like someone really went all out dressing this set to give us an impression of like what the Carters are like, and it's a lot.
There's also a like lawn jockey with an American flag on it. And yeah. Oh my God. I will note that the exterior is, I'm pretty sure, every house anyone ever had to go to on 90210.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's where Ben's parents lived.
Car wash kid.
Yes. The yep. car wash kid David, quote, tried to, quote, help.
Yeah. You may be right. They are also being dumb by meeting her without their lawyer, by the way. But anyway, Mr. Carter says they expected to hear from her lawyer, and Jo says she hasn't hired one. She was hoping they could work things out themselves right here in Brainerd. Just kidding, that's not what she says. That movie hasn't come out yet. After all they've been through, finding out about the baby must have been a shock. She was afraid to tell them, but they were so warm and understanding right up until they filed the lawsuit.
Yeah, Zuniga's delivery of that line is pretty brilliant. Like halfway through it, Joe's like, I can't sell this.
Right.
It's really funny.
So she says she's, you know, just been trying to figure out what went wrong, and then just barrels ahead with Allison's gambit in clip two, which is long, but, you know, we need to hear it.
I came here to tell you that I want you to be in my baby's life. It's very important for me, for my child to know his father's family. And if I gave you any impression that I was going to exclude you, I apologize.
And that is supposed to make up for the fact that you murdered our son.
Excuse me?
You didn't think we'd allow our only grandchild to be raised by a cold-blooded killer?
This is obviously a mistake.
You seem to make a lot of those, dear.
Please don't do this. Haven't we lost enough already? I want this baby to be good for all of us. I want you to be a part of my new family.
We have no intention of being a part of your family. What kind of family could you possibly provide? That baby will be raised by people with decent values and sound moral judgment.
Moral judgment? You sanctimonious, self-righteous hypocrites. This is my baby, and there's no way in hell you are ever going to change that.
Also, nice job raising Reed.
Yeah.
Hello. This is all your fault, Beesh.
Yeah. I mean, if this is your argument, like, she is not a fit character to raise a child because she almost killed someone, like, you know, there's only so far that argument can go, ma'am. Like, are you better suited to raise this child because your kid didn't succeed in killing Jo? I mean, you know, it's silly.
Also, if they do a home visit, what's going on with the couch? Mm-hmm. it's not okay.
No. Anyway, that's where we leave it for now. Hopefully Jo has learned her lesson, which is don't listen to Allison. She's an idiot. Speaking of which... On to our C-plot. Amanda and Allison revive their feud over Billy. So Allison and Billy start off their day, as we said, pissy at each other as Billy ends his flouncy packing by slamming a gift in front of her and telling her that since she called off the wedding, she has to return the gifts. And then they get to work and clip three.
Kathy, Kathy Mitchell went into labor, so I need you to take over her meeting. We're very close to landing the Glorious Gowns account.
The chain of bridal salons?
Can't you get somebody else? I don't know anything about weddings.
You would if you'd paid any attention to your own. Excuse me. We have a potential client waiting, so put on your happy, close-the-deal faces and get in there. Mr. McGovern.
Oh.
I'd like you to meet Allison Parker.
Hello.
Billy Campbell.
Nice to meet you.
They'll be joining us today. One of the reasons I brought Allison in is because she just had a wedding.
Almost had a wedding.
Glorious Gowns are upscale and very trendy. I think we should focus on a non-traditional campaign.
We could start by taking the wedding out of the church.
And put it where, Miss Parker?
Maybe up outdoors.
A place as unique as the dresses. An amusement park, a hayride.
A boat?
Okay. First of all.
A hayride?
I mean, I can see it. That would make for good pictures, honestly. Like, at least they would be different. But first of all, when is one of D&D's clients going to be like, don't make me another one of your fucking boat accounts? Like, enough with the fucking boats already.
Yeah, really.
But it's not today, because this idiot loves Allison's pitch, despite Billy's openly undermining her concept in the client meeting, which brings me to my second point. Fire Billy. He is bad at this. Like, don't be under your breath, almost had a wedding. Like, that. Save that for when you're in creative meetings, when the client is not there. This is when you're selling the client. Learn what your job is, you idiot. God.
Well, and whatever. Amanda does that all the time, so maybe she needs to fire herself as well.
I guess, but she's more smooth at it, at least. Like,
yeah, I guess.
At least when she does it, it's to advance herself, not just to undercut Allison. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah. Also, Allison really doesn't need any help in that department, so everybody shut up.
No, she doesn't. So then Amanda announces that D&D is not going to be doing shoots on Jake's boat anymore, which she is doing for a petty reason, but is really a good call for creative reasons as well, until Amanda tells the client they'll find another boat for his campaign, and I lose my tiny mind. Enough with fucking boats. Anyway, the next day, Billy goes storming into Amanda's office to bitch that he stayed up all night working on copy for the bridal account. I what? Doubt it. And that Allison barely looked at it before saying it was crap. Amanda seems dubious that
Team Allison.
Right. Although Amanda seems dubious that Allison would say that. And Billy admits that she actually didn't, but that is what she meant. Glancing at it, Amanda offers her take in clip 4.
This copy is great.
Thanks. I know it and you know it, but Allison, you know, it's hard enough starting a new job without having to duck her emotional darts every 10 minutes.
I'm not surprised at her reaction. Allison's professional perspective is often obliterated by her personal bias.
Tell me about it.
Well, she's obviously threatened by how easily you've adjusted. I'll admit, I was skeptical about your ability to jump from journalism to advertising, but whatever doubts I had are gone. You've done terrific work. Don't worry. I'll deal with Allison. This copy is great.
That's funny. He never has a second cup of coffee at home.
Thank you, Dave. No one believes that Billy's copy is great, right? We are
no.
All okay.
Well, it was copy, was it?
I mean, copy.
Oh, I that's why I replayed it. I thought he said copy, and then I thought maybe it's copy because that makes more sense.
Yes.
And then I heard coffee, so I made the joke.
No.
I was going to, if it was copy, it was going to be, oh, he never gets a second page of copy at home,
uh-huh.
Which would have been funnier.
Yeah.
So here I am with the bad ears, regretting everything in life. Goodbye!
It's not you. It's their A, bad enunciation, B, no time for second takes.
This copy is great.
All right.
Yeah.
I'm hearing it now.
Also, it's Billy.
Mm-hmm.
Neither his coffee or copy is great.
True. Anyway, I forget what my point was in this. Shut up, both of you. Not you, Dave.
Not you, listener.
No.
You.
The next day, it is Allison's turn to storm into Amanda's office and bitch about the Glorious Gowns campaign, this time at Amanda for overruling her on Billy's copy in clip 5.
Of course. You're trying to sabotage Billy's career.
Sabotage? How could you accuse me of that?
Because his work was excellent and you know it. You obviously don't want him here, Allison. You know, I could fire you for taking out your personal vendetta at the office.
Fine. If you're so sure I'm out to ruin Billy, fire me.
That would be too easy.
Oh, God. Not again. Billy's a free man, Amanda. You want him? Get him!
This is not about Billy. Is your memory that selective, or are you just suffering from some grand delusion?
Why are you doing this to me?
Okay, here's the recap. You set me up. You went behind my back and told Jake that I had an affair with Chaz. Then you almost killed my career by blabbing that lie in court. I almost lost my job and my mother. Well, it's payback time. I promised to make your life a living hell, and I always keep my promises. Oh, and, don't bother quitting. With the report I can put in your personnel file, you wouldn't get a job bagging groceries.
First of all, leave it to the professionals. Second of all, it's Allison?
Yeah.
Who cares? Like, just
right.
Let her hoist herself with her own petard. It never takes long.
True. But also, don't bother quitting. Like, wouldn't that solve your problems? Like, why are you trying to stop her from leaving this job? You know, like,
yeah.
Anyway, ridiculous.
Soap.
Indeed. She's not going to anyway. No one is, because they already built the set and they need as many people to work there as possible. Moving on to our B plot. Sydney helps unravel Kimberly's revenge plot. We start this plot line with Michael waking up with a start from a black and white nightmare of the last moments before he got smushed with Jane's car. Apparently, not the first time he's had this dream. He recounts the details he remembers, which all sound accurate to my ears and Kimberly's, judging by her intense, crazy eyes, which you can see in the visual aids. When he goes out to the deck, she follows, cooing at him not to put so much pressure on himself to recover his memories. Maybe they both just have to accept that his condition is permanent, but he refuses. There's a piece of the puzzle missing and he won't stop searching for it. Meanwhile, Jane is bustling around before work in her latest dumb and unflattering outfit. It's like a stretchy tank top under a vest with a choker, and it's all in like shades of brown and taupe, which do not work for her coloring at all. You can see this in the visual aids. When Sydney wakes up on the pullout and panics that she overslept, swearing that she set the alarm. Jane says she turned it off so Sydney could get some good sleep and adds that Sydney isn't going to work today. Jane is giving her the day off to get adjusted. This is, by the way, not going to look good if Sydney's probation officer comes by for a surprise visit on what is supposed to be Sydney's first day. And no sooner have I typed this in my notes than Sydney asks this very same thing. Jane says the probation officer doesn't need to know. Not how probation
not
works.
How probation works.
At all. And, you know, when you hire a person who's on probation, like, I'm pretty sure there are stringent requirements for reports that you also need to give, including, like, when the officer is not there, if I'm not mistaken, but whatever.
I think that's true. But this whole, the timeline of this whole subplot is insane, because mm-hmm. there's, like, three different angles of the sun, five different outfits, like, in one storyline, it's one day, but then in another storyline, there's, like, 3 days. It's not, I mean, soap, but it's not good.
No. So Jane just wants Sydney to take this fake job seriously. I added the fake part. Jane does not say that. And make a new life for herself. Sydney doesn't feel great about her future, given that she's broke, on probation, and her husband has amnesia. Jane tries to tell her Michael isn't her concern anymore, but Sydney says he's the only one who can attest that she is not the one who ran him over. And to her question, Jane says she has no news on his memory and does not ask. Sydney muses that it might jog his memory to see her, since she and Michael were married, but Jane draws that she was married to him for 5 years and he didn't remember her, so he definitely won't remember Sydney, and Sydney needs to forget him too.
Sydney is nice enough not to point out that Jane is a fucking bore.
Seriously.
I'm not.
Yeah, most of the time we forget Jane is on this show, so yeah. Anyway, of course, Sydney cannot forget Michael and finds him sitting on the sand in front of the beach house. He has no idea who she is, and instead of telling him, she pretends to have thought he was someone that she knew. And he invites her to join him, and they chit-chat a bit about his situation before he introduces himself, and she says her name is Miranda. And he says she's welcome on his sand dune anytime. And the next day, he comes home with one bag of groceries to see a sexy pair of legs lying out on the deck that end up belonging to her. He nervously tells her this is his house, but that he doesn't live there alone. And she leads that she didn't know he was married. And he says he's not, exactly. And she calls that good news and pats the chaise. And no sooner has he sat than she starts kissing on him. And he stops her, saying they shouldn't be doing this, but she is hard to resist, especially when she pinches him by the earlobe like a disobedient child as he tries to get away from her, saying that he's engaged and he believes in being faithful. And to her question, he says he loves Kimberly, he thinks. Kimberly says that before his accident, he was crazy about her, but as Sydney resumes kissing him, he seems less sure, briefly, before pulling away again and then holding the groceries in front of him like a shield and telling her she has to go. That night, Michael and Kimberly leave a restaurant, Michael marveling that the maitre d' knew him. Kimberly says they went there every week, same night and time, same table. Which, like, what happened to her whole plan of taking him out of town to try and give him new memories and make these ones less clear? Whatever.
Yeah. Michael notes that. Also, is that how doctor schedules work now? Interesting.
Oh, good point. I didn't even think of that. No, especially not when they're like residents or whatever they were, which are you know, even tougher. But whatever. Michael notes that their waitress didn't like him. And Kimberly says that he could be very particular about his food, which is a funny detail because, of course, Michael was shitty to servers. Like, yeah, of course he was. Michael is asking if she's sure that he liked Cajun shrimp when he steps out into the road again and right into the path of an oncoming van. And she shrieks at him to get out of the way. But as he freezes again, he flashes back to the blonde wig driver behind the wheel of Jane's car and seems to be able to make out her face more clearly right before Kimberly yanks him back onto the sidewalk. Gasping, she asks what the odds are of him almost getting run over twice in his life, but I actually think they're pretty good considering his survival instincts are none.
Yeah. Also, you're on a soap, honey. They're excellent.
Seriously. So they spend the next morning celebrating life with sex. Kimberly saying it hasn't been like that since maybe ever. Clip six.
You think that earns me a cup of coffee?
Your poor old memory really is gone, isn't it?
You forgot the routine. You see, we make love, and then you pad off to the kitchen to fix us a delicious breakfast while I shower and dress for my high-profile medical career. Your job is to love, honor, and keep the home fires burning.
Yeah, you know, I wanted to talk to you about that. I'm feeling much better. I thought I was ready to go back to work.
Michael, you have a head injury. Trust me, you need time to heal. Besides, I like you being home.
And I love being home, sweetheart. If it hadn't been for you, I might not be where I am today.
So just in case we don't know what that means, she goes to the shower and then the camera holds on him for like 20 minutes as he glares at her, which you can see in the visual aids. That night, Michael goes knocking on Jane's door and is happy when Miranda opens it. He followed her home when she left the beach house. And she shows off her negligee and he's like, going to bed so early? And she's like, why don't you tell me? And kissing ensues and he carries her into the bedroom. And he tells Sydney he had a dream about her the night before. She wanted him to tie her up, and he has brought a scarf, so she tells him to go for it. Clip seven.
I wanted to make love to you, but I was worried about my girlfriend. You promised to
make me forget about her.
I can. I will. Please don't make me wait.
If you think I'm making love to you, you're going to be waiting a long time.
Is this your game, Michael? You want me to beg?
Beg? Hell, bark for all I care. I wouldn't sleep with you at gunpoint.
Oh, my God. Michael. Is that you?
Yeah. How you doing, Sid? Oh, well, take it easy, Miranda. The more you move around, the tighter the knots get.
You scum.
Yeah, I miss you, too.
What do you want?
Answers. Who ran me down?
Kimberly. She's crazy, Michael. First, she framed Jane for running you over, and when that didn't work, she framed me. You know, she's been trying to kill you for months.
That Kimberly's a playful nut.
She's insane, Michael.
Oh, and you're normal.
Don't leave me here. Not like this!
Sleep tight.
Michael! Michael!
Michael, is that you? Best.
It's so good. The turn in that scene, the way her face falls, she's so disgusted. It's so good. The two of them are, it's great to have them back, like, in their real roles.
Yeah.
Like, as much as I enjoyed sweet little latchkey kid Michael, like, fucking asshole Michael is really superior. I hate to say it, but it's true.
Yeah. Ugh. He's good.
So after a commercial, Jane comes home from a date with Chris and is kissing him in the doorway when Sydney calls out to her for help and looks extremely pathetic when Jane finds her all tied up to the bed frame. And even worse when Sydney has to tell her who did it and what happened, although she claims that Michael shoved his way in, which Jane obviously does not believe. Chris says he's going to take off since they have it under control, and Jane gets up to kiss him goodbye. But while Sydney pouts on the bed, he creepily watches her. Ugh, I knew this guy was bad news, obviously.
Yeah. Also, only on soaps do they just sort of like freeze and then like roll a whole eyeball to one side. Like, you know, the person you're kissing notices that that's happening.
Yeah.
Smart guy.
Yeah. So at the studio the next day, Sydney is doing her fake job when Chris creeps up behind her and looms over her shoulder, asking if she's feeling better. Sydney, appropriately skeeved, asks what he wants, and he says this, clip 8.
I saw you last night. You must have been tied up for hours.
Yeah, so?
You may have fooled Jane, but Michael couldn't have tied you up unless you let him. You let him do it. No wonder you made such a good whore.
Jane told you about that?
I would have figured it out anyway. I've seen enough white trash hookers to last a lifetime.
Ugh.
Okay. Like, is that supposed to be threatening? Because where? Like, right. Are you a cop? No? Then you're gross. Like, right. Fucking take it easy, Tommy Lee. He sucks. He's good, though. Like, the actor is good at being
he
gross.
Is. Yes. So that night, Kimberly and her weirdly dark nylons, you can see them in the visual aids. They're like the color of support hose, like medical support hose. I don't know what the story is. Anyway, she and they come home to the beach house and she and Michael have this exchange, clip 9.
Why isn't dinner ready?
Well, I thought we'd go out tonight. Maybe you could wear this.
The dress she was wearing in the car.
Oh, you don't like that dress? Too bad. It would look so good with this.
What the hell is this all about?
Just a little amnesia humor.
Oh, no.
Hi, honey. I'm home.
I mean, yeah, also very well acted, but Kimberly, get rid of the evidence.
Honestly. again, only on a soap. Like, you know, you live next to the ocean. Like, just drive up the road and throw it in the trash. Throw it in the ocean.
Anyway, yeah.
I mean, don't throw things
go to
in
that
the
pier
ocean.
Brenda and Dylan went to and chuck it over the side. What are you doing?
Yeah. So Kimberly tears out of the house and gets back in her car, but Michael just easily saunters out and stands in front of it while she impotently revs the engine, yelling that if she wants him dead, now's her chance, and daring her to come kill him if she can. And when she can't, he pulls her out of the car, and clip 10.
You kill me or love me. You make up your damn mind.
Well, she made up her mind.
Yeah. As the guitar probably let you know.
Yeah, it's they just start frantically like tearing each other's clothes off in the driveway against the car. And like, I would like to criticize Kimberly for this choice, but I feel like I've been pretty obvious many episodes on this podcast, including this one about my feelings on disgusting pig sociopath Michael. So I guess I get it.
I really don't understand the extent of the dickmatization, but I mean, if it's working on you, I guess it makes it more credible in the show. And without it, there is no show. Like, this is this is like such a plot driver that he can dickmatize these scheming ladies that, okay.
Yeah. I mean, I don't feel good about it. Like, I'm sorry, but
it's
facts
a
are facts.
Fictional like character. Feel however you want. Yeah, when Dr. Peter Burns gets here, believe me, we're going to have many versions of this conversation.
Finally, our A plot, Palmer's plot, pops off. We rejoin Amanda. Let's bake some bibby babkas. Rejoin.
That's really good.
Thank you. We rejoin Amanda and Palmer the morning after he surprised her on her doorstep as she in her amazing two-tone robe. Love this robe. It's like fuchsia in the front, black in the back. Looks amazing.
Yeah.
See it's good. The visual aids.
It's a good robe.
Mm-hmm. She unmakes the couch that he slept on, and he claims he can do it while actually making no motions toward doing so, which, by the way, classic dad move,
yeah,
in my opinion. He then tells her to act like he's not even there, and she's like, save it, recapping all the ways that he fucked her life when he jumped bail. And he tries to get her on side by saying what great personal risk he took to come and see her, and when she is unmoved by this, he claims he's in L.A. to turn himself in. He just has to take care of some personal stuff first. Bank accounts, very normal, not suspicious. And Amanda rightly clenches up and begs him not to put her in this position because if anyone sees him, she is screwed. He replies by saying he's facing 15 years in federal prison, which is not a great answer when someone is begging you to be careful and not reckless. But he asks for 2 days and she very reluctantly agrees. So then Jake shows up to do whatever on the boat and finds stupid Brittany sitting on the deck reading a magazine. They have the 5 millionth version of the conversation of her getting the fuck out already. She assures him that she did check into a motel the previous night, but that her husband found out that she's been staying with Jake. Clip 11.
You were trying to help, but in Elliot's mind, you helped me escape.
Have you guys ever considered marriage counseling?
This isn't funny. Elliot is crazy. He has a very explosive temper.
Okay, I got it. I'll be on the lookout for one irate lunatic husband.
I've never seen him so angry, Jake. He'll come here. So if you could just stay off the boat for a few days.
Oh, drop everything because your husband's a nutcase? This is a business. I've got a photo shoot here tomorrow, okay?
I didn't mean to get you involved.
I'm not involved. Now, thank you for warning me. I can take care of myself.
Well, I tried. Goodbye, Jake.
Bye!
Oh my God. She is so bad. Just blow the shit up and leave. Ugh.
Yeah, he's got a really explosive temper. Hardy har. God. Ugh. So That night, Palmer lights candles on the dinner table that Amanda immediately blows out, telling him this isn't a party. When there's a knock at the door, Palmer grabs his wine and ducks around the corner before Amanda opens the door to Jake, clip 12.
Alone, Jake? Where's your boat, bimbo?
Brittany's not a bimbo. And she's not on the boat, so that's the reason you canceled the photo shoot.
Oh, hardly. I don't make business decisions based on your carnal whims.
You pulled the plug because you're jealous. Admit it.
Don't be vain. There are 1,000 boats in the sea. I haven't found the right one. Good night.
Sounds like you've seen the light about Jake. He's a loser, Amanda. Don't waste any more time on him.
Don't you dare criticize Jake. After you ran off, he was there for me, and I'll never forget that.
Amanda, I didn't mean to imply that.
Understand something, Daddy. Jake and I aren't dating, but I still care about him. He's the only honest man I know, and you of all people are in no position to judge him. Pasta's on the stove. Help yourself. I've lost my appetite.
Only on a soap. Like, take the pasta with you. Why doesn't anyone ever do that?
It's a great point.
Yeah. Like, how about pizzeria number is on the fridge? Fuck off.
Yeah. My pasta is coming with me to the bedroom. You amuse yourself.
Well, where I will rage eat it while watching the TV that I also wheeled in there because fuck yourself.
It's also nice that Jake would defend Brittany, but she absolutely is a bimbo. Come on.
Yeah. Well, she's not an actor, so what else you got?
Boy, she sure isn't. So as soon as Amanda's gone to her bedroom, Palmer gets on the phone. He is somehow not worried he's being monitored and calls Brittany, who's standing beside a payphone because the past. Things are not moving at his end, he says, so they need to get moving now. Done. So the next day, Palmer and Brittany sit in a car outside a bank, Brittany practicing over and over again to forge Amanda's signature while Palmer gets increasingly impatient. Brittany is also getting testy and tells him just to get his loyal daughter to do it, but he doesn't want to bring Amanda in on this. Brittany snaps that the bank is Palmer's job and he can make his precious little darling Amanda get her own cash from the safe deposit box. So that night, after apparently springing for Chinese, Palmer dares to ask for one more favor. He owes bad people a lot of money. They're demanding it back. If he doesn't pay it, they're going to come after Amanda, he claims. She thinks he's asking for a loan, but he explains he opened a safe deposit box in both of their names that has close to $1 million in cash in it, but he can't risk getting it himself. She will have to do it. She is naturally suspicious in clip 13.
And then what?
Then I'll pay off these thugs and turn myself over to the FBI.
The money, was it stolen?
No, honey, it's legitimate. It's been sitting in the bank for years. The bank records would prove.
I'm sure they would. You always cover your bases, don't you?
Amanda, the money isn't for me. I mean, you can turn me down and it'll be there whenever you need it. I have to protect you, darling. I've caused you too much pain already. I couldn't bear to be stuck in prison knowing you're in danger out here.
Okay, Daddy. We'll go to the bank in the morning.
You know, I feel like obviously we know how this ends as we're talking about it, but I think I have to give Heather Locklear credit for doing more than I think is on the page with this, because I think that she's acting this like she knows this is all bullshit and she knows he's just conning her, but she's letting it play out so that he will do whatever he needs to do to leave.
Yeah. And she does really get a lot of like weariness in there.
Yep.
So, yeah, good for her.
Mm-hmm. The next day, Palmer's keeping it low profile in his daughter's red Porsche convertible with the top down in the bank parking lot right out front, waiting for Amanda to come out with the cash, which she does as the scene begins, getting into the car and handing it to him in a briefcase. And he's all, good girl, which is creepy to do for a woman over 30, and she spits that she feels like a criminal. He claims she didn't do anything wrong, although I doubt she finds that very convincing, considering the source. Besides which, she wants to know, if the money is clean, why was he keeping it in a safe deposit box? And he says this, clip 14.
I wasn't keeping it in a box. I was keeping it out of Hillary's hands.
What's mother got to do with this?
Our divorce was brutal. Hillary wanted it all, and she was vicious.
You cheated mother out of $500,000?
No. I put it aside for you, Amanda. I was a single father. I wanted to make sure you'd be taken care of. I certainly couldn't count on Hillary. Honey, the only time I even got into the cash was the day you closed escrow on the apartment building.
My loan came from that box?
Yes. I'd hoped someday to tell you the building was, and is, all yours. I guess that day is today.
Daddy, I had no idea.
I know. That's the way I wanted it. I only wish I'd had such foresight about my own future.
Well, I mean...
you didn't get hit by lightning. You committed fraud. Yeah. Foreseeing that that's not going to work out is not that difficult.
Not really. Yeah. No. But at least she got a building out of it, so there's that. You know? Yeah. Loan forgiveness, it's not nothing.
It's true.
At the marina, Brittany sneaks onto the boat, first calling out Jake's name to see if he's around. When she's convinced that he's not, she gets out all her plastic explosive, which you can see this in the visual aids too. It just looks like four chunks of like children's modeling clay with like wires sticking out of it.
It's and so bad.
Smiles at it beatifically. Then Amanda comes home with groceries in a fine mood, having spent the day yelling at Allison that she ain't shit and calling out for Palmer. But she finds the place empty and looks completely bereft when she realizes he is gone. You can see this in the visual aids, too. But this is another instance where she does more with honestly nothing. Like, she just stands in the kitchen and is still for a moment. And she communicates a lot. Heather Locklear does very good work in this episode. And especially in this scene, like looking like the abandoned girl that Amanda once was.
Yeah, she's not in that like merciless close up that they put a lot of them in because they can't act with their bodies, and she just like she doesn't even deflate exactly. There's just like she like leans onto one leg, and it's just I mean, it's very sad actually. Like even though you know this is coming, and also it's a soap, and they're not real people.
Yeah,
it is sad. You feel bad for her.
Yeah, I noticed that it's a female director of this episode, and she does stay very far back with the camera as Amanda's like sort of bustling through the apartment, like in her usual, you know, busy, active mode, like looking for him. And then as soon as she realizes that he's not there, just being still for a moment. And it's nice. Nicely done.
Yeah.
From both of them. But so then she sees the briefcase is completely empty of cash and curses him out loud, as she should. But she only gives herself a second of self-pity before getting on the phone and calling the FBI agent on the case to dime her father out, as she also should. And the next day, Jake is getting the boat ready for something that's not a photo shoot, presumably, when Palmer rolls up, climbs on board, stows a bag in a little cubby, gets a gun out and jams it in Jake's ribs, telling him they're going to go for a ride. So Palmer makes Jake boat them out to open water. Jake bitches that he could have hijacked any boat in the harbor, but Palmer says he's created a new identity for himself and he needs to get rid of the old one first, and he'll be killing two birds with one bomb. Har. So once he spots another little boat with the captain flashing a light, he has Jake stop, which is when Jake sees that Palmer's accomplice is Brittany, and she's armed. Clip 15.
Let's see how you take care of yourself now, Jake.
Ooh!
You and, Brittany?
Our partners have been for 6 months.
Meet Elliot, my jealous husband.
I knew that story was bogus.
Really?
Like, you're not gonna kill me over the Avanti deal.
Well, first you got me arrested. Then you stole Amanda and turned her against me. You got too close, Jake. Amanda fell hard. I won't let her risk her future over a loser like you.
Let's get out of here.
You're not going anywhere, Palmer. I've got the passports, the cash, and absolutely no use for an old man with the FBI on his trail.
Brittany?
She shoots him.
Jake! Jake, hurry! Get up!
So gross. Like, I mean, I'm not sure how much credit we should give the writers for the subtext here, but like Palmer saying that Jake stole Amanda is so creepy.
Ew. Like, this is just one of those things where it's like, do none of you have kids? Like, this is just not how people in civilian life talk about each other. Like, again, we know it's a soap, but phrasing.
Yeah. So once Jake has shoved Palmer's corpse off him and staggered to his feet, Brittany yells at Jake to come with her, and he is somehow still dubious about her motivations. Like, Palmer just said he's going to blow up the boat. What is your alternate plan? But Brittany says she has perfect new ID for him and $1 million in cash. He already said there's nothing left for him in L.A. They could start over anywhere they want. When he hesitates, Brittany tells him not to make her kill him, but he tells her to go to hell. Big episode for men daring women they've fucked to kill them, by the way. So she decides to boat off instead. Jake is checking Palmer's pulse when he sees the bomb and has just followed the wires into the hold when Brittany on her boat is like, bye, Jake, and hits the trigger and the pretty lady explodes a lot. Will Jake survive? Yes. Let's close things up by naming our episode MVP. Sarah, who is your choice?
Michael.
That's a good choice. I'm going to say Heather Locklear for all her nice acting in this plotline. As we
also an excellent choice.
Detailed. Least valuable player. Allison, for her own bad life management decisions, but also for telling Joe to go and see the Carters without a lawyer.
That's pretty bad, but I'm going to say Palmer.
Fair.
I guess you can con a con.
I guess. Good job, Brittany. Never thought I would say that, but anyway, she's gone, so I'm happy about it.
Yeah. Oof. Next time on Again With This, in which everybody who is not actually Michael is so bad at trying to act like Michael that Jake, disgusted, bails Los Angeles completely. Oh yeah, Jake survived. Spoiler? Here's another spoiler. Your corneas won't survive artificial leads without some eclipse glasses, so grab a pair, as it were, before you head to our website. That's againwiththispodcast.com. That's also where you'll find links to our very special 90210 book with excellent visual aids of its own by Julie Kane. So browse on over there today. You can also follow us on Twitter at AWT90210 and join our Patreon page at patreon.com/againwiththis. Any level of support gets you extra content. I'm terse confirmation of past employment, Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is Bankstash Ex Machina, Tara Ariano. She's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer is house husband, David T. Cole. Talk to you next time. Ooh.
What?
So true.
I love that one.
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts NatureScapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.